It's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Every weekday around 10 a.m.
Electric lights go out. Chris Harrington joins us now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Ain't Nothing You Can Do by the late, great Memphis R&B singer Bobby Blue Bland, whose statue you can stand next to at the corner of Main and MLK, if you so choose, passed away on this day in 2013.
So you are once again doing your early word duties. And you wrote a column yesterday about a whole bunch of stuff that happened while you were gone. In terms of what happened yesterday with our mask up deal, the city did a mask up thing, urging people to wear masks, but resisted going back to phase one. What did you make of all of that?
I think there is a lot of resistance to going backward on this sort of phase thing, even though the whole concept was based on being able to slide on the scale in both directions. The whole phase idea, like, I sort of embraced as from a pragmatic sense of, you know, it sort of helps people get their head around the whole idea. But from the beginning, to me, I like the idea of more micro-targeting anyway. Like, even though I was wanting to be cautious, like, I think they should have been doing elective surgeries before they did. And so, to me, I would hope that they will be willing to take closer looks at things, and maybe you go backward on one thing instead of an entire phase if you feel like you need to, and you're willing to sort of make those smaller adjustments. But I think there's a lot of wariness about doing that among our leaders, and so I think we'll see what happens over the next few weeks. I do think it's pretty clear that getting more community buy-in on mask usage is one of the best ways we're going to have to try to slow things down. And what they did yesterday in terms of, you know, more availability and more promotion of that, I think, you know, I've always thought might do as much, you know, as an ordinance will. And so I'm hoping that will have a positive impact.
More availability of masks? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, they're giving away, like, I don't remember what number was, like 20,000 or something.
Do you know where or how?
It's in the story that's linked, but I don't remember all the details. All right. I mean, there's a whole community partnership thing, and the Grizzlies are involved, and other people are involved.
Okay. I've lost track of my phases. if we're in phase two. If you did roll back to phase one, what would that mean? Or here's the truth, is that I guess from my perspective, it looks like we don't have great weapons here. If we're not all staying inside,
right.
We have two weapons. One is to wear a mask. Like, that's the obvious weapon that we have. And the other one is to not have, like, big, giant indoor gatherings, right? I mean, those are sort of it. So what would one roll back if we're one to roll back anything?
It would be nice to have a little bit more specific information from a contact tracing standpoint on where this new community spread, where we think it's coming from, right? Like anecdotally, like I got a message from a reader whose spouse is a doctor, and this is like total secondhand anecdote, right? But what they said was, you know, what my partner's seeing at the hospital is, like, you know, people getting it from, you know, birthday parties and pool parties, and it sounded like, you know, the implication was like private gatherings, right? Not necessarily restaurants and like these public places, but like people are just laying their guard down and, right, hey, like, let's all go hang out at your house kind of thing, right? That's a hard thing to sort of police or to, you know.
No, but it would be good to tell people that. I do
think. No, this is what I'm saying. I'm saying it would be nice to have more specific information about where the most spread is coming from. Because I still got people saying, well, it's the protests. And, like, I am not dismissive of that as a contributing factor, but there's not a lot of evidence. That there's, like, zero evidence whatsoever that's really the problem. I mentioned in that column I wrote that, like, when I was trying to cover the protest, I went to Oak Court Mall because there was a rumor there was going to be a protest, and it didn't happen. But I walked around the mall inside, and it was full of shopping. It seemed like a normal day of shoppers, and 20% were wearing masks. My assumption is a lot more spread happened there, inside with that level of mask use than most other places. And so, yeah, I think we need to mask up. We need to get back to treating things the way we did those first few weeks when, you know, I was not a hermit. I was not locked in my house. I went to the grocery store and I got takeout and whatever, but I wasn't doing anything other than going to the grocery store and getting takeout for the most part. And so I feel bad saying this because I want to support our local restaurants, but I'm not going to go eat inside at a restaurant out of my own just personal choice. I have not done so. I've eaten inside restaurants 4 or 5 times. Every single time has been work-related. It was, you know, when Jennifer Biggs was organizing the Let's Go Out and Check on Restaurants, I did a couple of lunches for that. But personally speaking, I'm not going to go, I don't care about the social distance and the mask and all that. I'm not going to sit inside for 40 minutes and eat somewhere unless I'm doing it for my job.
Right. No, I will say, I don't know whether this is, it does feel to me like the public does move on this both ways. Like, the public very clearly let its guard down writ large.
That's what Jim Strickland said yesterday, yeah.
And I get the sense that the public is, at least gradually, certainly from the piece on grocery stores that we did, is the public is sort of okay. I'll put the mask back. I'll take John Martin as an example. John Martin says, all right, fine, I'll start wearing a mask everywhere I go. And so I do think that the public can re-embrace more strictures. And that would be the one about private gatherings would be an interesting one. If people just knew, yo, the reason that this is happening is at pool parties and whatever, you know, that this is, we've seen 5 examples of this. If you're going to do this, do it outside. Like, that would be helpful, and everyone isn't going to respond to that.
Right.
But some people would. I do think some people would. Of course, it's very hard when the president is, like, he abandoned testing now, no more testing in the White House, and then he's doing a giant-ass rally in Tulsa. Like, how are you supposed to take it seriously?
Well, this is the funny thing. I mean, both and I'm not very critical of our local, I think our local people generally done well and been serious about it, but you know, we had these breathless daily briefings nationally and locally like the first couple months, and the problem's worse now. It's not worse everywhere. It's not worse in New York. It's worse here. And like, if we don't do that anymore, on the whole, I think it's worse than the country overall in terms of number of cases. And we're not, you know, it's like, we just, I think there's a lot of where we're bored with this now. And that goes from the president of the United States down to just regular people. And then I think you're right. As cases rise, people sort of have less of a leash to just say, I'm bored with it. It sort of, it reaches out and grabs you, even if you're not trying to pay attention to it.
Well, and I do think those daily pressers created a sense of seriousness. And
and
abandoning them has contributed to the idea that it's not as serious. And it is obviously more serious. So there you go. I take it you have no issues with Trevor or Reza. Maybe I asked you about that yesterday. Trevor Ariza.
No, that happened after I was on the show. Okay. Of course, I have no issues with that.
Of course, you have no issues with it.
Right.
What's the basketball impact?
I think a meaningful but not overwhelming one. I think he was, even at his advanced age, he was probably obviously Portland is one of the primary teams the Grizzlies would have to worry about. Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento. Trevor Ariza was their best wing defender. And so the best wing defender on a team is an important player on a team. That team is obviously driven by Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. But I think they do not have a lot of great, size and defensive ability on the perimeter on that team. And he was the best they had. And so I do think, you know, over an 8-game sample, like, does that cost them a win they would have gotten otherwise? Like, I don't know. You're dealing with a small sample of games. But it certainly hurts Portland.
Grizzlies, I guess, verbal agreement with Anthony Tolliver, as everyone knew they would, or whatever. Did I hear that? Whatever. They're bringing.
Yeah. I mean, the 11 a.m. today, our time, is when the opening bell rings on this transaction window, and the expectation, barring something unexpected, is that the Grizzlies will re-sign Anthony Tolliver at that point.
How do you think when the Grizzlies reconvene, they will sort out the lineup? Obviously, you're going to start Ja, and Brandon Clark, I presume, and I mean, no. I know, I'm sorry, and Jaron and Jonas, I presume those three will start.
I presume Dylan Brooks will start.
And Dylan Brooks. And so there's just one spot.
Yeah,
there's
just one spot.
How do you think they sort it out?
I think you essentially have three options there. I mean, Kyle Anderson at the moment is the incumbent, but he was really sort of he stepped into that role because of the Jay Crowder trade and because Justice Winslow wasn't healthy, and so he was really keeping the seat warm. Justice Winslow is the presumed ultimate starter there. That's why they traded for him, and like they've been really good with D'Anthony Melton. And so I think it's those three players you're really looking at. I'm going to guess it ends up being Justice Winslow. That's why they traded for him, and it's not like he's displacing someone who's had the job all season. And so if I were placing my bets, I would place my bet on Justice Winslow.
No Josh Jackson.
Given the other options, I don't think so, no.
And how then – and that, you certainly have depth then behind them. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they sort
out. If everyone's healthy, like let's say you start Justice Winslow, like you had Tyus Jones, D'Anthony Melton, and let's say that's your backup backcourt, and then you got Brandon Clark as your third big, and now you're looking at Gorgui Dieng is sort of your backup center, sort of spot minute fourth big. And now at this point, even if you're going to play 10, which is a lot to play, you're choosing between a Kyle Anderson and a Josh Jackson.
Yeah.
And so I would say, you know, Kyle Anderson obviously has the seniority. Josh Jackson was good for those couple weeks, but I would think he's your 11th guy at the moment.
The other two things I wanted to ask you about, both of which were mentioned in your early word column today. One is, there's a new deli opening that you discussed on Park, it's west of Audubon Park. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't Google map it. I'm pretty sure I know where it is without looking it up. I mean, it is you know, Audubon Park is there at Getwell, and so it would be west. Yeah, west of Getwell along Park. Yes, along that strip
near the Las Delicias, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Do we have a good deli?
You know, Memphis is not, I don't think, great on the deli front. I mean, Fino's, but that's a very specific kind. That's more of an Italian. It's not like a classic deli. Like, Bogey's is okay, but I may be forgetting something. My favorite deli used to be Frank's Deli on South Main, which no longer exists, and I miss that club sandwich all the time. But I don't think Memphis, unless I'm forgetting something, and I may be, I don't think Memphis is a great deli town. No,
I think we're a poor deli town. We're also a town that is now bereft of Bluff City Law. I didn't ask you about that yesterday. Was not a big surprise that it didn't come back. Was fun to watch, though. I did enjoy it, and I thought it got better at the end. I mean, as you pointed out, you needed to like the characters as opposed from the rip to the headline stuff. And by the end, I was liking them.
Yeah, no, I would have been happy with the same show with, like, some different writers and a little bit different bit, and for it to be more of a, you know, the life of a law firm in Memphis instead of, like, we're going to, and I'm not the guy who's like, I don't want Hollywood preaching at me, but, like, really, like, I mean, given the level of the writing, I didn't need the show preaching at me every week. Like, well, I wasn't getting much out of it.
The preaching was the worst part. It was stilted preaching. That's exactly.
Yeah.
And stupid courtroom preaching, honestly. The other stuff was much more fun. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, but I regret that it's gone. I hope Lynn Sittler said in the story that Jared Boyd wrote for us last week, which she had already said to me, you know, back pre-COVID when we talked about it, that she I hope she's right, you know, that she tends toward optimism, but you know, she's also a pro, has been doing this a long time, that she really thinks that there's a strong relationship that's built between NBC executives and Memphis, and that, you know, they've communicated with her that they're interested in doing other projects in town. Obviously, even before Bluff City Law, they'd come here to do a whole episode of This Is Us, which is their biggest hit show, and so there is something beyond even Bluff City Law there. And so I hope that is a relationship that bears other fruit in the future.
Chris, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
That is Chris Hendrickson. Jameson, mosquitoes. Now is the time. I went for a dip, by the way, in my pool. I have a pool, and I'm sort of one of these people who loved having a pool when I had little kids. And now that I got big kids, I don't need the pool. But I'll tell you this. Nothing ruins a pool like mosquitoes. because you want to sit out by the pool. You want to be able to enjoy the pool. Jameson can help you control your mosquitoes, and they can do it in two ways. They have a program by which they come every month during the summer and tackle all the trouble spots, address them, mosquitoes where they live and breed, and take care of them that way. And then if you have any issues between visits, they'll come out and address them. Or if you're just having a big event, they can do that. They can come out and help you with the big event. You do not, I've told you about everything they do. Jeffrey uses them. I use them with termites and with my lawn and with all pests of all sorts. But right now, it's mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are going to be destroying your summer. 452-1505 is the phone number. 452-1505. They're at JamesonPest.com.
The home of the Jeff Calkins Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. till 11 a.m.
14% of Americans say they are very...
We're miserable.
We are the greatest country in the world, but we're not very happy.
Take that for that.
14% say they're very happy.
Don't miss the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. At 92.9ESPN.com. On Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Rewind on the radio.com app, and smart speakers say play 92.9 ESPN.